I think we'll get started. Usually the introduction and give their disclaimers and all that fun stuff, but they have been here enough times that they don't care anymore. So my name is Dr. Kurt Perkins. What I do is functional chiropractic and lifestyle medicine. What my passion is helping people create more health plus healthcare. But what kind of makes my heart sing at the end of the day is helping good people out of bad situations. And probably one of the bad situations I see oftentimes is regarding lab work. I'll have a number of people come in, they've said my labs are normal, but I still feel like junk. I still have XYZ going on, they don't know what to do with it. And so there's kind of three things I'll go through today on how to contextualize lab work and make it better for you for health outcomes opposed to symptom chasing and symptom management. And so here's the disclaimer they usually say. So this is just for educational purposes. It's not advice, should not be treated as such. If you have any specific questions, consult your healthcare provider, in which I say that's me. So your healthcare provider is probably not gonna know anything about what I'm talking about today. So you're gonna go in and have a bunch of questions and they're like, okay, I have no idea. So there's my shameless plug for myself right there. Now in real estate, there's three things you always look for. I don't know if any of you guys are real estate agents. What are they?
Location.
Right, location, location, location. And so lab work is kind of the same way. There's three things you're always gonna look for. Context, context, context. You gotta remember, lab work, so your blood is essentially testing your physiology. It's not this static thing. It's always ever changing based on what you have to interpret from life coming around you. So it could be movement patterns, it could be thinking patterns, it could be eating patterns, it could be social patterns, it could be spiritual patterns, it could be toxins, it could be whatever. There's a number of things that your bodies always have to interpret on a second by second basis, and even millisecond by millisecond basis. And so looking at lab work, the biggest thing out like that I think it's poorly interpreted is the context behind it. And so context number one, this is a statistical curve called the Gaussian distribution. You guys, like if you see lab work and off to the side, you'll see a range. That's what this range is based on. And what that range does is it lumps 95% of the population as normal. Do you know 95% of your friends or relatives that are healthy or normal? No. So there's a huge wiggle room within there that's going to leave you, hey, your labs look fine, but yet something can be grossly abnormal. Just to make it easy, let's say vitamin D. So from the low end, you'll see a 30, whatever the units are. To the high end, you'll see 100. So if your vitamin D levels are between 30 and 100, they're saying, hey, you're great. The problem is vitamin D binds right to your DNA. So any deficiency, even a little bit, can potentially affect every single system, every single function in your body. And so I had a woman this past week come in. So if that 30 is the low end, she was at 30.3. They're like, you're great. I'm like, not so much. You're barely preventing rickets. And no one's seen rickets in a century here. So one of the things I do when I look at labs is instead of having a range here to here, I probably tighten it up a whole lot more. So when I'm going over labs with people, I'm flagging a lot more stuff. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're in an active disease state, you have pathology, a diagnosis. It's more predictive, preventative measurement. Hey, let's nip this trend in the bud before we now become the 2.5% this way and 2.5% that way. That makes sense. All right.
So
it's like a bell curve, but it's just on us specifically. It's not the overall population like that one you just showed us.
Yeah, I mean, how they got to that statistics is they took.
My blood work, if it was the sheep they were looking at.
Yeah, so you'd have your actual value, but they would put that value within here to here to say, hey, you're within this normal generalized statistical range.
Okay. And you look at the specifics, okay.
Yeah, I don't like to rely on that as the absolute. And I think that's the biggest thing, because you'll see people will get their yearly lab work or whatever, and then come 55, like things are way off the chart. And they're like, hey, your labs were normal for the previous 5 decades, now it's off the chart. We don't know what happened to you. And then they start blaming, oh, it must be something genetic. And you're like, give me a break, because you can't figure it out, because you can't pin a lifestyle or pin a choice to what happened or an event that happened in the previous year. The catch-all is it must be something genetic, which the reality of something genetic, it should have showed up right at birth.
Because they just go over real quickly.
Right.
The doctors are limited on time, but they go over, okay, your knees low or your cholesterol high, like 5 things and that's it.
Right.
Do you have a list of about 100 things you don't know what it is? But anyway, I don't mean to rub down.
Yeah, no, that's good. We're small enough, we can have dialogue here.
You go, oh, well, what does all this mean? Well, it doesn't matter. It does matter.
It absolutely matters.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's in my body. That's what's circulating around.
So right. And you can't compartmentalize something. So let's say a TSH was high. So that's usually their standard. We're going to check your thyroid. We're just going to do TSH. Well, there's other 10 other factors that can affect that number. And so if that one's elevated, usually the standard is, hey, let's throw you on a T4 synthetic to lower that. Not knowing, was it a pituitary problem? Is it actual a thyroid problem? Is it a conversion problem? Is it an antibody problem? Is it a inflammation problem? So never really kind of getting to why would this value be abnormal. Context number 2. Essentially your lifestyle. This is why I say lab work is kind of a living, breathing entity. It's your physiology, but it's not a static thing. Like if you look at an x-ray, that's kind of a static thing. You can see a fracture, you can see arthritis, you can see the next time you x-ray that, well, unless it's a fracture, I guess, but it's probably not gonna have much change. Bones aren't gonna be taken away and things like that. Where lab work's this living, breathing thing. And what it's going to be based on is how your nervous system, I said, is interpreting your life. And your nervous system is what organizes and coordinates everything that happens. Like it was getting a little bit of warm in here. If you could just feel the AC just kicked on in here. Mm-hmm. Now my body temperature is starting to calm down a little bit. It's cooling off. And same thing. So your body's always going to react just like the AC did, the thermostat did. Now it's going to organize it in one way versus the other. So it's either into a protective mechanism, so the lady yelling on the phone, telemarketer won't leave her alone, whatever it is, or a basket full of kittens. So unless you hate cats, like a happy event, something less stressful, that type of thing. And depending on how long you're in one side versus the other, that's gonna affect how the lab work is going to express. So if you're taking notes, kind of create 2 columns. So we have left side, which I call protection mode, or the telemarketer. Right side is the growth side, or what we call kittens. And depending on how your body interprets it, you'll shift one way versus the other. The thing is, if you take away one thing today, you can't be in growth and protection at the same time. So one's most often gonna express more so than the other. Which side do you think gets expressed more with our everyday life? Right, the protection side. So let's look what would be on this side. So let's say it's a real protection mechanism. Let's say you're out hiking and a bear pops out in front of you. What has to happen in your body to be able to escape or fight or protect someone around you from that bear? What do your muscles have to do?
Keep on your flight and your run or your stand.
Right, they're gonna tense up. So you need some instant energy. What hormones do you think are going to be kicked in? Cortisol is going to be a huge one. What does cortisol do?
Stop
fat.
Actually, it doesn't store fat.
It doesn't store fat. It creates it, right? Doesn't it create
it? It creates sugar.
Correct, yeah.
Yep. So cortisol sees danger, danger, danger. I'm going to err on the side of caution. It's not going to try to logic and make sure the bear's already full or lost its teeth or anything like that. Your body's like, hey, this thing looks dangerous. Let me act accordingly. So yeah, so brain, spinal cord will signal the adrenals. They'll release cortisol. Cortisol rushes sugar into your bloodstream. Sugar is used for energy, so an instant energy. So we have increased instant energy here with cortisol. Now let's say it wasn't a dangerous attack. Let's say you're in your car driving and just someone cuts you off. So now you're not going to use the energy except shaking your fist at the driver in front of you. So your blood sugar doesn't go skyrocket high and you get a coma. What hormone gets released to make sure that comes down and regulated? So let's say you had a Snickers bar, a Frappuccino, and a pint of ice cream. Just so you don't keel over and die, what hormone gets released to help store that sugar?
Insulin.
So insulin's gonna be on this growth side. So if we have cortisol releasing sugar here, and we have insulin storing sugar here, and we can't be in growth and protection at the same time, which one do you think is gonna win out?
Cortisol.
Yeah, cortisol. So then we become insulin resistant. What does insulin resistant sound like? Yeah. Diabetes is the big thing, but insulin, again, is another hormone that's involved in pretty much every reaction in the body, from hormone regulation, nutrient activation, the gambit is widespread. So just right off the bat, let's say your lab work shows elevated blood glucose levels and we have elevated A1C. So the A1C is basically an insulin resistance test. What are they going to do for treatment?
Drugs.
Right. What if you said, hey, I just ran from a pack of wild wolves? Do you think they would change their diagnosis and change their treatment plan? Yeah, they should, right?
They should.
Remember, that context of why this is happening. What if you said, hey, I ate your standard American diet, your low-fat diet, and this is where it got me? What are they going to say?
It's
good for your heart. Keep going, right? Because we don't know anything else. What else do you think is going to be released? So if adrenals are releasing cortisol, what other hormone sounds like adrenal or has its root word in adrenal?
Adrenaline,
yeah, not a trick question. So adrenaline, so you guys have all had the adrenaline rush. What happens to your heart rate and blood pressure? Right, goes up. What do you think happens to your respiratory rate, your breathing rate? Right, that goes up. What do you think happens to your blood clotting ability? She says lessens. Anyone disagree?
I think it thickens.
You say thicken, you say lessen. Defend your points. No.
Protection. If protection is the mode, the initial mode, then the protection would be to keep from bleeding, I would think. That would be the body's first reason.
Exactly. Yep.
But so, if you were in a car wreck, or say, I'm veteran, if you were in war and you're cortisol shot up, which people that are not veterans can do that too, but if you're in a car wreck and your cortisol shot up, then say for instance, I have to say this, there's a wound, then with all that pumping a lot, it could really make some things worse with your everything elevated.
Yep.
Because you're not, like you said a minute ago, you're not logic, so your body's not logic, so it's trying to protect, so it's like all rammed up.
Exactly.
Or anybody being in car wreck, anybody have something dangerous happen or any threat, it's not just veterans, but the
only one. Right. And something else that happens on this side is sensitivity increases at the expense of memory, concentration, and learning. So let's say you had a previous injury. So say you got injured in the military. Then you have a car wreck, which isn't, well, we'll say it's not as dangerous, it wasn't as stressful, but it still shifts you over here. That previous injury you had may increase sensitivity to that, and you're like, I didn't injure myself, why is this pain increasing, or why is this tightness and those kind of physiology effects. I mean, this is why I dig deeper into it, because as a chiropractor, a lot of people come to me originally for like a pain type of syndrome. And they're always convinced it's usually just a physical aspect of it. But with no preceding event, a lot of times it's going to be something that shifted them over this way, which it could be a diet thing, it could be an emotional thing, it could be a physical thing, it could be, instead of an event like a car wreck, it could be, hey, I sit at a cubicle for 10 hours a day. So context is huge. So if we have increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, we have increased clotting, increased respiratory rate. What does that sound like? If you go to your doctor with those list of symptoms, what are they going to tell you have?
They're going to treat those symptoms. They're going to treat those right in and there without context, basically.
Right. So that's why the context is everything. Because let's say, like those things are, like I say protection, I don't say these are bad or good. Because these are life-saving in the immediate. So if you need your heart rate and your blood pressure up and your clotting factors up and your respiratory rate up to deal with whatever protective things are going on in your life, if I start to lower them, what happens to your chance of survival? Right. You may feel better, but your chance of survival didn't increase at all.
Plus you've lost your balance, that your body's
potentially, yeah. Yep. Now, going back to kind of your point with, say you had past military event, and now you have another event, and this will happen either side, this is your nervous system's reaction to those things. Whatever gets triggered more starts to create a new default pathway. So whatever side we're on, protection or growth, the side that gets triggered more starts to become a new default pathway. Your nervous system is like plastic. So if I had like a plastic spoon and I try to bend it a couple times, no big deal, I keep molding that thing, and now I can create a perfect or a permanent curve in that. The cool thing, it's necessarily not permanent with our body. We can create tools and strategies to make sure we're balanced one way versus the other. Ideally, you want to be in the center point here. So if a bear comes, great. You can protect yourself. Maybe he got you, your trip running away from him. You heal the injury back, and now you're ready to come back. The problem, what I see more often with people, is we have an event. Great, we start to deal with it. Boom, another event. Start to deal with it. Boom, another event. And like it just keeps piling on top of each other. And we start getting to a fatigue point where if I see someone dominant on this side, it's either they've totally fatigued this part out, or they're on the medications that are now just suppressing everything in there. So that growth side, that kitten side, think of like a baby where they eat and sleep, but really don't have any way to defend themselves. They're dependent on other people to provide that aspect for them. So I'd rather actually have people, it's easier to shift people that are way dominant on this side than way dominant on the other side. Which side do you think a thyroid would be on? Growth or protection? What does thyroid do?
Regulates
what? Body temperature, metabolism, development of your nervous system. So if you're running from a bear, are you worried about catching a cold?
No.
That would be a growth side, part of your thyroid. If you're running from a bear, are you worried about losing weight?
No.
That would be a growth side. So
if I lost weight before before you start.
If you get lost, you're probably hoping you have a little extra because you got some reserve stores there.
Sorry, I should have said that.
No, so thyroid's going to be in this growth side. So if we can't be in protection and growth at the same time, why do you think we have so many thyroid problems now? Right. We're operating over here versus balance either side.
So thyroid actually is on the growth side.
Yep.
Even though you could, with all those things, think of it as being protection too, in a sense.
In a sense, but yeah, like generalized overview, it's going to be more on that side. I mean, everything is going to have some crisscross pattern with it. Like you can't, I can't compartmentalize. Like your heart's going to work on both sides. Your thyroid's going to work differently on both sides. Where's digestion going to be? Yep, it's going to be on the growth side. So if we're always in protection, what is it, the little purple pill is like the number one selling drug in the nation. What about fertility? We're having the epidemic of infertility couples, and yep, it's going to be on the growth side. Memory, concentration, learning. Growth side. Cholesterol. So it's going to be on both sides. And that's why context is huge. So cholesterol, she says it protects the brain, which is right. It's one of the building blocks of your brain, spinal cord, nervous system. It's the protective wall of every single cell in your body. Yeah, it's the building block of your hormones. So your estrogen, your progesterone, your testosterone, but also cortisol. So if we need cholesterol to build hormone, and we're on protection side, is it going to build testosterone or cortisol? Yeah, cortisol. So if we have to run from a bear, your body's going to shift that cholesterol triage over to building cortisol, opposed to building testosterone. And now we have these low T centers coming up. What's the prime treatment for lowering cholesterol?
Statins,
right? So we have increased cholesterol because we need more repair mechanism and we need more building of cortisol. You go to your doctor, cholesterol is elevated. They say, let me put you on a statin. So it's going to lower your cholesterol, which lessen your chance of surviving the bear, but it also gave you less building blocks to build up these growth hormones like estrogen and progesterone and testosterone. You see how this all just cycles together?
That's why it's called balance.
Right. And that's why I say more health, less healthcare. Because the more we start inducing more healthcare into the realm, the less our health outcomes have happened. Look at the past 40 years, since the late 70s, since I was born, we've had this attack on fat. They thought, so triglycerides over here. Remember, if cortisol is dumping sugar, insulin can't store it. So that sugar's got attached to something else, so it'll attach to some fat. And so then that fat then gets deposited from knees to armpits. And so we have this central pedal obesity. And so they see the effect, a bigger waistline, and say, hey, fat's the problem because that's going to be the saturated fat. And you're like, no, it didn't start off as saturated fat. It started off as sugar. And therefore, we started this low-fat campaign in the late 70s, which took out the flavor of the food. And to add the flavor, we had to dump a bunch of sugar into it. Yeah, exactly. Thus, a ton of weight gain. A ton of depression. Yeah, it's.
It kind of reminds me like chasing a kid, because the longer you chase him, the more he'll run.
Right.
And so you're never going to get anywhere, you know.
That's why, in the context, like to chase the symptoms,
exactly.
Like if someone has elevated cholesterol, I don't even like people going on red yeast rice until we figure out, okay, why is this happening? Because I'm like, just to arbitrarily lower it, even with something, an herb or natural, doesn't address the underlying condition.
get to a mood? I mean, is part of what you do that or what?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I do.
That's what, yeah.
It's been more out of frustration of, well, one, seeing my own family go down poor health routes and like the solutions that they're getting, I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And then just, I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years, seeing patients come in, like taking care of chiropractic, like, oh yeah, I went to my other doctor, they told me this, this, and this. I'm like, how's that working out? And they're like, well, it's not. I'm like, so it's been more of my experience of other people, like there's gotta be a better route type of thing. So cholesterol is going to be the huge one in the lab work that they're going to tackle. TSH is going to be the huge one that they tackle. TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone.
But is that good reading on thyroid? They keep telling me mine's normal, and I know it's not. Has it been since?
No, because I think, let me backtrack just really quick.
They lump all these into that average, the 90%.
Right.
Yeah. Average, the
list. Were you here for this graph?
No.
Okay, I'll backtrack really quick then. So.
Yeah, poor George.
No, you're good.
I was here at 10 o'clock. I just didn't fucking.
Yeah, no worries. This will be good review for everybody.
Relax.
So on your labs, There's the normal reference range usually. So your value is 2.5 and the range is 1 to 5 or whatever. I'm just making up numbers. Well, that 1 to 5 lumps you here to here with 95% of the other population. So they'll look at that value and say, hey, that's within the range, you're normal. We can't figure out what's going on with you. So what I was saying is tightening up the ranges to have more of a predictive preventative value than an outright pathology value. So they can say, hey, things look normal, but.
And then ignore the symptoms I'm telling you, which is their list of symptoms for a hypo.
So we can't be in growth and protection at the same time. I'm trying to think what other things like that I see common autoimmune type stuff. So like I said, if we're in protection mode, we're not really worried about catching a cold if we're running from a bear. And it's a little more complex than that. So there's essentially two branches of your immune system, what we call TH1, which is going to be your inflammatory side. So when you have a cold, it's the coughing, the runny nose, the fever, and diarrhea, all that stuff. That's not necessarily the bug doing it. That's your body reacting to get rid of it. So you sneeze at however 60 miles an hour, like you're expelling all this stuff. You have diarrhea to get rid of stuff. The other side is then the antibody side. So you're building up recognition. So the next time this thing comes around, you're like, hey, I can nip you in the bud before I need to go into this full blown attack. In protection mode, you're gonna cut out that inflammatory side of stuff. So I don't know if you've ever like think back to sports injuries or something like that. And say you're the heat of competition, you roll an ankle and you're like, oh man, I'm done. You look down, you're like, hey, that's not swollen that bad. It's actually pretty good. Let me just wrap it up, I'll get back in the game. Boom, you complete it. But then the game is over, you go home to recover, and then this thing just all of a sudden blows up. So what cortisol and adrenaline are all those hormones are gonna do are depress that inflammatory side of things. Because it's not gonna be conducive for your survival if, let's say, the bear rips your arm or breaks it or breaks your leg, for that to swell up and now you're immobile. Your body's gonna push through it, wait till it has some sort of safety zone before then that gets expressed. So with the immune system, those inflammatory sides get decreased, but then the antibody side has to kind of overwork. And so during times of protection mode, you'll see antibody or autoimmune conditions get worse during times of stress, because the antibody side, which is already over being produced, now gets summoned and triggered some more. Makes sense, or am I just confusing you, or now you're making getting angry because of all the stuff you've been told over the years? And then context three, and this kind of we've already been alluded to, is with a poor lab value or anything, what's the solution going to be? And that's kind of, people are always like, should I get tests? Should I get labs? I'm like, well, what are you looking for outcomes? In what kind of mode? Because we talked about it. Let's say you do have the high cholesterol and the high blood pressure and all those things. You can, like, we have such cool technology. You take this one chemical that can target this one thing and now lower that. But I always ask, did that make you healthier? So it might have saved your life in the immediate, but long term, what's the plan there?
Because a lot of regular doctors don't go into prevention. They say, here's the pill, it's fixed, okay, we're good. And then it may come back because maybe they didn't, or whoever, I'm not blaming, but maybe there wasn't a lot of information to say, okay, don't eat this anymore, this or balance or whatever. The deep stuff you're getting into.
Yeah.
Maybe they skirt over that.
And it's not that they're bad people for doing that. That's the way they're trained.
They're not trained excessively in nutrition like you are.
Well, their standard of care is, here's a list of symptoms, here's a list of poor lab results. We can match up a diagnosis to this, so we can put a label on that. And with that label, we have this intervention to lower that. And that's successful standard of care. Whether someone got healthy or not, it is regardless of what that is. Like I always pick on Lipitor because they always say, because of our decades of research and what their research is, let's say they had 100 people here, 100 people here. So these people got Lipitor, these people got a placebo. After 3 years, they look at, okay, who got a heart attack? In the Lipitor group, 2 people got a heart attack. In the placebo group, 3 people got a heart attack. So this is where they play with numbers. So you and I be like, hey, there's only a 1 person difference. So 1 person out of 100. So we have to treat 100 people for only 1 person to benefit. That doesn't sound very successful. What they do is say 2 or 3 minus 2 is 1. 1 is half of 2. So now we can say there's a 50% success rate of lowering cholesterol by taking this opposed to doing nothing. And so you can play with statistics. Like you'll see it with the flu shot. You'll see it with blood pressure medication. You'll see it, like they always play these numbers of.
And they always table it with something that's nothing.
Right.
But they don't compare it with something that's good.
Yeah. Or what they'll do.
The ones doing the testing anyway, the drug companies.
Yeah, yeah.
That just like, okay, I'm done with that. As soon as I find that out, I don't feel like, it's like a salesman for a place that's working on commission only.
What? Right. And they only have to prove 2 positive studies to submit to the FDA to get passed. So they could have 1,000 studies where everybody died and they had 2 studies where 1 person improved more than the other and they can submit that. And then, so I mean, that gets more into the politics area of it and yeah, way more time than we have. But I mean, you're gonna have to pay attention to it right now because we're in the middle of presidential campaign season. I mean, there's tons of candidates. Look who's backing their platforms. I think like, shoot, I don't remember the website, but if you just Google like top lobby dollars, like the top 5 are all drug, hospital, pharmaceutical, like they produce more lobby money than any other industries. Yeah, they don't have to release all the research, just the 2 positive ones. Yeah. So the context is it a chemical intervention? Is it a lifestyle intervention? Like, if you haven't guessed it by now, I kind of like this right side of it a little better. Because, let me go back, because what's going to put you on protection versus growth is if you're deficient here, if you're toxic, that's going to shift you over to the protection side of it. Your body's trying to figure out, how do I keep this person going with what input I have in there? A drug, even though it could save your life in the short term, is something that's toxic. It's going to shift you over there. And a lot of times drugs are going to make you deficient because it'll block nutrients from other aspects of what you're trying to do. And so long term, I don't think this is ever a good solution. But again, I'm biased. I don't prescribe them. I can't prescribe them. But it's looking at, are we in a fire department standpoint, or are we in a construction standpoint? So if your house is on fire, you're going to call the fire department. And they bring axes and fire hoses. And if there's a fire in the kitchen, but everything's locked up, they're going to smash down your door, break some windows to get through it to save that house. And most of the time, we're grateful for that. Great, we have to rebuild a little bit, but the structure is great. We have to just replace this one room, maybe some drywall, maybe some framing, those types of things. But the next day, you don't call the fire department back to rebuild that up. You call contractors who have paintbrushes and hammers and nails and ladders and all that type of stuff. And here's where the war happens between the two sides, is that medicine is like, look how great we are at saving houses. And so they set up a study and they say, hey, we're going to put these 100 houses and we're going to spray them down with water every day for the next 10 years. And we're going to take this 100 houses and spray them down with fake water for every day for the next 10 years. And at the end of the 10 years, like, look how many houses we saved, how many fires we prevented. And we're like, well, no, now the houses are rotting. There's mold problems. The paint's chipping and the drywall's cracking. And they're like, but look how many fires we saved. You're like, but you created more of a problem long term. And so here's where the big political debate happens. Here's where, yeah, it's just button heads between the two sides of the camp. And so both have great value, just in appropriate times. Like, if your house is burning down and the carpenter showed up, like, hey, I'm here to, with my hammer and nails, you're like, you're an idiot, get away from here. Like, I want the fire department. So that's where the context comes back into play, is, am I in the middle of an emergency situation? Did the bear just eat me? And I need drugs, I need surgery. Like, did a shark bite my leg off? Yes, I don't want to feel any of this. Give me the pain meds, give me the blood transfusion, whatever it takes. But now that you're past the point of potentially dying, is that intervention still going to be a great aspect for rebuilding? And so kind of where my context is these five pillars. And we've talked a lot about this middle one, because I think this is the one that sets everything off, is this autonomic imbalance. So your nervous system, are we growth side or are we protection side? And so assessing that to figure out, okay, how much are we imbalanced? How far have we gotten? That kind of stems everything else. The next one's adrenal dysfunction. Because remember, adrenal is going to release cortisol and adrenaline. Cortisol will actually inhibit the thyroid. So if we have a thyroid problem, we're probably most likely, actually we do, we have an adrenal problem. So always harping on the thyroid isn't going to be a good long-term situation without addressing this.
So are you saying we treat adrenal first, or are you saying we go back even further to treat thyroid?
It just kind of depends. Like, what's the most imbalanced, and what, again, more, what's the context of why we got to that standpoint? Because there's some things, I mean, sometimes there's a limitation of matter and we've gotten too far down the road before someone's like, hey, I'm sick of that past. Like my dad, who's, what is he now, 73? Like full-blown Alzheimer's. If they're like, hey, we want to try something natural, I'm like, well, at this point, you may have a little bit of results, but you probably pass the point of returning back to fully functioning. But my mom's wisening up now and taking him off drugs, so she's like, hey, look, he does better without the medication. I'm just like,
and what they're doing to me is making us live in nursing homes longer instead of helping us be well until we die.
Yep.
It's really sad to go see people there. That's a real education.
Right.
Watching your friends have to go there and then go visit.
So that's pillar number two, Number three is going to be insulin resistance. So remember, cortisol gets released, dumping sugar. Insulin gets released to store it, but if we're on protection side, we're going to be insulin resistant. The first place we become insulin resistant is the liver. The liver will hold about a day's worth of energy and then says, okay, I'm cutting you off. The problem is a lot of our hormones have to go through the liver to be activated. So let's, again, I just keep harping on the thyroid. So if thyroid releases T4, T4 has to go through the liver to be converted to T3. If the liver's junked up, it's not accepting that communication, then we have more of a conversion problem than an actual thyroid problem. And so the thyroid problem is more of a tertiary, secondary problem opposed to a primary problem. Let's spend some time on the conversion opposed to the initial. Second place is our muscles. So they'll take the next day's worth of energy and then cut it off. And then the easiest place to store, like I said, is that knee to armpit, this central area, because it's the least resistant. The problem is that when we store it, now that becomes, well, a lot of times that fat will act as estrogen. So we have too much estrogen going through the body. And for females, that's going to affect them this way. For males, it's going to affect them this way. It's also going to be inflammatory, which is another pillar. I don't know if it was my next one. No, but which starts the inflammation process. Again, short-term inflammation is good to protect, but long-term, that's where it starts to do damage. And a lot of that, again, is sparked by the liver. The liver is going to be the originator of a lot of those inflammatory factors. And then we have an immune dysfunction as well. So we talked about that balance of TH1 versus TH2. A lot of it's going to be gut related. So if digestion is shifted, or say you're shifted to protection side, digestion goes down. A lot of times, even natural practitioners will focus more on the lower aspect, so the supposedly leaky gut and the colon and SIBO and all that stuff. I say let's start a little bit higher up in the stomach, because oftentimes there's not enough acid to break down and digest what we have before it gets down there. So there's where you're going to see opposite effects, where you may have these symptoms and you go to a traditional doc, he's like, hey, that's too much acid, let's put you on an acid suppressor. Where I look at him like, hey, I say there's probably not enough acid, let's boost your acid. So it's one of those things. And that's where lab work can kind of uncover some pieces. Hey, if the total protein is low, if they're in balance, like, so there's a lot of different ways to delineate that.